They have found no subject more beautiful and inspiring for their characters in music, art, song, or story. One may spend weeks in exploring the galleries of art in the heavenly world and he finds the subject of the Christ the favorite of painters and sculptors. Michelangelo has delighted to picture him in over 1,000 attitudes. Every great artist, in fact, has created his most sublime works with the Christ as the leading character. A female artist, bearing the name of Celeste Vincenta, has produced some of the most marvelous conceptions in sculpture and painting of Christ, known in heaven as the Divine Joseph. There are galleries of art containing the conceptions of this gifted artist, and every picture or statue occupying the place as central figure of a group is that of the sublime Son of God. We see this beloved one in the grand review of angels, conferring blessings upon the people, clothed in his robes of purple, gold, and white. Again we see him giving into the arms of a mother the child she thought she had destroyed, never believing that it would live to confront her on the other side of life. We see this gentle one ascending through the ether to the higher kingdoms, bathed in a wonderful glowing light. We see him blessing the little children and standing before those who were bound in material life. No words can depict the wonder that beams upon their faces as they look upon the Divine One in all the glory of his mighty power. Again we see him depicted counseling with one who has passed into the spirit world doubting the existence of spiritual life after death. We see him raising his hands toward the multitude, while vibrations of divine power emanate from him and find expression in the forms of those present. One sublime conception by Da Vinci is entitled When the Comforter Comes. It shows the beloved one moving through the dark sphere, and wherever he moves the darkness and the shadows flee away and in their place shines a wondrous light. The expressions upon the countenances of those who behold film can hardly be described. There is something wonderful about it. Chapter 10, In the Spiritual and Celestial Worlds. In the sacred verse of the spiritual and heavenly worlds the character of the divine Jose stands out in bold relief. The poet Tennyson has taken the life of the inspired one from mortality to immortality and formed from it a sacred and sublime work. It is considered a masterpiece by higher critics. The great music master Wagner has given to heaven a grand conception also portraying the character of the divine joy. It is entitled, A Master of Power. During my 2 years of life in the heavenly world it had been my pleasure and privilege to look upon the masterpieces of sacred art of which I have made mention. I have also listened to and witnessed the musical and dramatic compositions that have for their theme the immortal Jose. More inspiring to me, however, have been my personal experiences with this glorious character. I have gained from him knowledge of higher spiritual laws that have been helpful to me in my progress to higher consciousness. This divine teacher has opened up the way for me to attainments that I have longed for during many years of my life. I may say that I have sat at the feet of the Master and gathered the jewels of thought and wisdom that have flowed from his divinely inspired soul. That he is the true Son of the reigning God of the earth, the spiritual, celestial, and higher worlds, I know to be a fact. That he is a reigning God himself is another great truth of which I have knowledge. My experience has taught me many things that no longer require faith to substantiate them. I know that there are many believers in spiritual truth dwelling in physical bodies who would do away with the belief of the existence of the one the earth calls the Christ. Apostrophe. From my point of view, to do this would be to take away the foundation upon which religion rests. Many inspired teachers, whose work and mission have been to help humanity to attain a higher standard, have been given to the world. They have passed on to higher fields of action, and by their example many have learned to look heavenward. None other, however, has given to the world such a sublime and wonderful example of inspired life as that of the one who is the subject of my present writing. Tall, stately, and majestic, his glorious figure emitting a halo of light, he moves among the people of the higher life, speaking a helpful word to one, blessing another, and proving in more ways than can be mentioned that he is a master of mighty power in the great world of the spirit. How often have I looked upon him, floating upward through the celestial ether toward higher realms of being, his majestic figure aglow with brilliant light. I have watched him after he has attained a height of many thousands of miles, and he was as plainly visible as he had been when moving among the people in the celestial world. An artist of the celestial world has depicted this divine one far up in the celestial atmosphere, descending toward the people with arms outstretched, as in the attitude of blessing. This masterly conception of the divine in art is entitled the King of Heaven. I make mention of this character because he seems to belong so essentially to all people of the mortal and immortal worlds. His father, who, at the time of my passing, was the supreme divine ruler of the spheres, was a being of such magnitude and power that but few could comprehend him. They could hear him speak and now and then could see him, but only those who were very enlightened could put themselves in sufficient touch with him to overcome the feeling of awe that his personal presence brought forth. My experience has taught me that in higher life we must grow toward higher things before we can grasp their meaning or learn to assimilate the lessons they teach. We may be brought before some wonderful character or divine manifestation and be unable to see it and yet have the inner consciousness that it exists before us. The lesson such experiences impart is this: we must unfold the higher consciousness to the degree that puts us in unity with that particular being or manifestation of higher power of which we would have knowledge. One peculiarity of the spiritual vision and understanding is that it is capable of so many degrees of development and unfoldment. It would seem to the material conception that all persons of the higher life, from the spiritual to the celestial worlds, must possess the rate of vision that enables them to see alike whatsoever is brought before them. I have been in the presence of beings of mighty power that mine eyes could not behold, but there were others in my company who have been able to see and describe the appearance of those mighty ones, whom I have afterwards beheld with the power of a higher unfoldment of consciousness. This is one of the mysteries of the spiritual consciousness that is so difficult for the human mind to fathom. I have been far up in God's kingdom and the kingdom of the blessed. I have looked upon marvelous manifestations and magnificent beings, while at the same time I was blind to other beings and demonstrations that were going on all about me. Later on my vision was unfolded sufficiently to behold them. Truly, it is a grand thought to contemplate and reflect upon the unfoldment of the higher consciousness of the immortal mind. It is a subject that can never be exhausted, for there is always more to it than can be grasped at any one time, no matter to what mighty degree the consciousness has found attainment. Chapter 11. In the spiritual and celestial worlds. What constitutes true religion in spiritual life is a question that comes up continually in the minds of the thinking people who are broad enough in their ideas to realize that not any one religion held by the people of earth can be sufficient to hold the multitude of spiritual beings who are passing to higher life day by day. This question of religious belief was another subject of absorbing interest to me, and so I made it a point to interview people of all spheres, from the lower to the higher. I found some of the most devoutly religious people I have ever known inhabitants of the lower spheres. I found that what the world terms religion was not always goodness or purity, that it was sometimes a cloak for traits of character not at all desirable. I found that many who believed themselves to be God's chosen people, because they had been religious, were spiritual paupers in the life beyond the grave. They were spiritual paupers for two reasons. In the first place, they had lived a life of mere form, and had not cultivated the broader spirit of progress which must always have a higher motive than that of negative goodness, a motive which builds for character and for helpfulness to humanity. In the second place, they were bigoted and refused to accept the true religion as it was imparted to them by refined and educated spiritual teachers. Some will say that it is perfectly natural that a devout, religious person, imbued with his own ideas as to what constitutes true faith, should refuse to accept ideas that are new to him in relation to religious belief. When I state, however, that the spiritual beings sent to teach the truth to these religious bigots were persons of superior power and inspiring personality, it would seem that those who are to receive the instruction ought to be amenable to such high influence. Some do accept the truth, but the majority hold to their own belief and refuse to be influenced by any other ideas. This is very bad for them, of course, and holds them back from the path of progress until such a time when they decide to learn the way of the truth and the light from those sent to instruct them. I found Catholics, Methodists, Baptists, Presbyterians, Episcopalians, and those holding to other forms of belief in the first to the fourth spheres. After the fourth sphere, there was but one religious belief held by all beings of the higher life. They had attained the stage of development that gave them knowledge of the truth, and it was not necessary that it be imparted to them by teachers appointed for that especial purpose. They had the knowledge of eternal progression and the mighty truth that every being called to the other life must work out his own salvation. By this time they had learned that church form, as it is carried out in the churches of earth, counts for nothing as far as the salvation of the soul is concerned. Religious belief in the higher life is founded upon knowledge and does not require faith, although faith does figure in relation to the great truths carried out in God's kingdom and realms beyond. Chapter 12, In the Spiritual and Celestial Worlds. The family life was beautiful in the heavenly world. Some of the most pleasant hours of my life have been spent in the loving companionship of friends and loved ones of that life. Had I not been ambitious to perform much good work for the cause of humanity, it would have been almost a temptation to spend the larger part of my time in my own beautiful home and in enjoying the affairs of interest that were taking place continually in different parts of the heavenly kingdom. It seemed that the knowledge I gained in relation to higher things was to be modified and applied to those of my earthly friends who were prepared to receive it. Gradually, as I unfolded and progressed in higher knowledge and understanding, I was brought into a deeper line of study and work. I prepared myself for each step ahead of me in such a way that the knowledge I gained was well grounded in my understanding and I was capable of imparting it to those ready to receive it. My life was divided into three parts: the gaining of spiritual and heavenly knowledge during the hours spent away from the earth, the hours of pleasure spent with those I cared for during what is termed the astral travel, and the hours I spent writing my views and experiences through a scribe selected for such work. It was a pleasant thought to me to realize that I could make my spiritual experience practicable in a material way. The other dear ones, with whom I was associated in a spiritual way, were as interested as myself to tell of the wonderful life and revelations of the great beyond. In a sense, I learned to live in two worlds at the same time. The plan of life, as I beheld it from my new viewpoint, seemed marvelous indeed. The knowledge of eternal progression, the great ocean of space, where worlds existed beyond worlds, and worlds surmounted worlds, until it was impossible to find a beginning or an ending, interested me greatly. I wondered if I would ever progress sufficiently or perform enough good work to enter realms of power existing beyond the celestial world. From those higher realms, it seemed, emanated creative power that gave life and action to the spheres below. What went on in those higher realms was a sealed book to those in the realms below, unless it was especially ordained that certain information would be given. Those who really desired to progress to a point of understanding where they would be able to enter the higher kingdom and gain a knowledge of a higher expression of creative power were given the opportunity to prepare themselves, but they must be passed upon by the powers up to the 350th degree. One desiring such attainment must make no mention of it, but the desire in the mind would be known by the god of the 350th degree. He would consult with the god of the 349th degree, and each ruling god of the degree below must manifest his approval until it was known and desired by the mighty ones of the higher regions that a certain one was qualified to pass up into those sublime realms where god power was so intense in its manifestation. I must confess that I was surprised when it was revealed to me that I had been selected as one to enter God's kingdom and be brought into communion with the higher powers there. Through a newly awakened power in my oversoul, I was asked to set apart a certain time every 48 hours, during which I would be brought into spiritual contact with some of the mighty powers far away in infinite space. In order to do this, I must enter the sacred shrine of my celestial home and then bring myself en rapport with those who were to sanctify and prepare me to enter a region where only the grand, the elevated in thought and the pure and unselfish in action were permitted to enter. I must learn some powerful lessons before I would be qualified, and even then I would be obliged to pass through some great ordeals after I had passed up into the higher realms, of which I had no conception. I was told to reflect well upon the great step I proposed to take. Some had taken the step, but had not acted exactly as they had been instructed after returning to the celestial world, and they had been recalled to the higher regions to remain there for all time. Never again would they be permitted to mingle with their former friends and loved ones of the celestial world. It would have been a mighty trial to have had anything like that happen to me, so I was quite determined to accept the honor and at the same time carry out without faltering the obligations and responsibilities I was supposed to assume. The hours of preparation I spent in my own sacred shrine, with the light of great God, powers illumining and flooding my spirit and quickening it for a larger work, filled me with a new realization that I had not known before. A new sense was unfolding within me, which perhaps would not have been quickened under any other condition. These were my most sacred moments, and for the time being, I was so uplifted in my realizations that I seemed to enter into a new sphere of being. How vain and unsatisfying seemed the life and conditions of the material world in comparison, and yet I could go from this sublime state of exaltation to my friends of earth and participate in their interests and pleasures with a great deal of enthusiasm. When mingling in the life of the spirit, life was all harmonious and beautiful, but when commingling with my friends of earth, I could experience many of the feelings and emotions that I had while an inmate of the physical body. In this way I was enabled to enjoy all conditions that came into my life, and I was happy, very happy indeed, but at times I experienced feelings of indignation at the actions or different people of earth, whose movements hindered the carrying out of plans that would have been helpful to a good cause. After I had undergone for a period the special preparation, the time came for me to pass up into God's kingdom. I was not permitted to know beforehand what awaited me there. With great anticipation, however, I awaited the summons that would take me up into those mighty realms. Page 80, Part 2. Chapter 1. In God's Kingdom. One day, in company with the beloved Jose, I was summoned to God's kingdom. My mind, of course, was filled with the anticipations of what awaited me. The spiritual mind knows not fear, and so I feared not, although I had reason to believe that I would be obliged to pass through an experience similar to the one we call death, before I could enter those higher realms of being. I trusted and placed my spirit in care of the divine Son of God. One could not fear with such a being for a guide. In passing through the first degree of spiritual regeneration, the atoms of my spiritual body were disintegrated and only the God, center of my being, was apparent, but in a few seconds I stood forth again in a new body of a much higher grade than my spiritual form. I was dazed for a few moments, but realization soon came to me, and then I understood that for each higher degree of being we must pass through an experience which serves to clothe the God, principle of the being, with a new regenerated body. I had been a celestial being before, but now I was a super celestial, and I had passed through the spiritual death. My vision previous to this time had enabled me to behold myself in all my parts, but with my new form of vision I could see that I possessed parts that had not been revealed to me before. Of course, I had possessed these parts before, but they had not unfolded. I compared myself before to a partly opened flower. Now I was the unfolded blossom, and, no doubt, as I continued, there would still be a higher unfoldment for me, of which I was not conscious at this stage of my unfoldment. And so we traveled on through higher space, the beloved Jose and I, and the atmosphere through which we passed was filled with vibrations of power. There was no vacuum in that atmosphere, which was in a continual state of vibration. 32. The sensations of power that were sent down from the higher realms toward the celestial regions were modified somewhat before they reached the celestial sphere. I could experience them in the fullness of their power, as my new attainment of understanding and my regenerated body were capable of receiving such emanations of power. As a celestial being, I would not have been capable of entering these regions. Spheres of active life, power, hundreds of times larger than the spheres of the earth, were formed about each other. We moved rapidly, and the vibrations of the atmosphere produced a force that was equal to millions of degrees per second. I beheld a great deal that was so unlike anything I had ever looked upon before in a material, spiritual, or celestial sense that I could find no words to describe them to those who had not passed through the great change which ushers the human body into a state of spirituality and higher understanding. As a rule, we are only able to comprehend that which can be measured by the state of understanding to which we have attained, and so I knew that, and 3. I passed through many wonderful experiences while sojourning in God's kingdom that I could never describe to my friends on the earth, for I should be writing a collection of words that would have no meaning in a spiritual or physical sense. Upon arriving at the metropolis of God's kingdom, I was brought into contact with beings the most marvelously grand and beautiful that I had ever looked upon. These beings have never lived in human form, but had been created by God, power in a perfect form. They were neither flesh, blood, nor spirit. They were a higher degree than spirit, yet they were in the form of men and women, but of such a high degree that they manifested the perfected sex, which needed no other half to complete it. These people had attained such a high degree of perfection and knowledge that it would have been impossible for me to mingle with them with any degree of understanding had I not undergone a special preparation under the divine Jose. They were called the immortals of God, and were of mighty power and understanding. They seemed to know of me and of all matters in connection with my life, for they revealed to me a great deal that had transpired in N.Y. life. 84, Chapter 2. In God's kingdom, my close association with the divine Jose in the journey to the higher realms of space gave me strength and power from the higher sources of being. The experiences through which I passed were equally interesting and far more wonderful to me than those through which I passed in the transition from material to spiritual life. The revelation came to me for the first time that the spiritual man is capable of many regenerations, and when I say regeneration, I do not mean reincarnation, for the spiritual ego of the man or the woman never changes or loses its identity. You may say, how about a very wicked person? How can he become purified and spiritual and still retain the individuality he felt while in the physical body? How can an apparently stupid person appear like himself after his faculties have been developed and unfolded through higher influence and teaching? 5. I can only say, in answering the foregoing questions, that the wicked and stupid characteristics of the class of people mentioned were not a part of the real individuality. The higher and better part of the nature that prevails after the person has emerged from his prison, house of clay, constitutes the real personality or individuality of the being. The fact that a stupid man can become an intelligent being and a wicked man become an angel of light is proof in itself that there was good material from the beginning in these apparently undesirable offsprings of humanity. It only required the proper development to bring forth the good, just as the cold and apparently lifeless marble requires the peculiar touch of a hand responsive to a master's bidding to bring forth the imprisoned angel of the stone. We know that fine, toned instruments are discordant and inharmonious when touched by unresponsive hands. I may say that I passed through a spiritual regeneration each time that I passed into a higher sphere of being. It was absolutely necessary that I do this in order to enter these kingdoms, as neither flesh nor blood can enter the kingdoms of 86, heaven, neither can the celestial body enter God's kingdom until its ego has emerged and taken on the next higher form of manifestation. After the change has taken place, the only difference that is apparent is a more ethereal appearance, a more beautiful and powerful aura of light vibrating from the body, and a greater degree of power manifested by the personality. A celestial being must resume his former appearance after returning from God's kingdom to the celestial realms, but there always remain with him certain peculiar signs which enable the observant person to always tell that a certain person has entered the kingdom of God T greater than R the kingdom of the blessed. If the harmony had been exquisite in the celestial world, it was even more so in God's kingdom. It was grand to be alive in the celestial world, but it was glorious to be alive in God's kingdom. Every moment was filled with rapture, a rapture so exquisite that a celestial, spiritual or material being would not be able to hold itself together under the intensity of the cosmic vibrations. 87. The highly gifted beings of God's kingdom received the power sent from the kingdom of the blessed, and by their own marvelous power manifested it through the cosmic ether to the celestial kingdom. Each kingdom of being received its power from the one next higher and, in turn, manifested power to the inhabitants of the kingdom below, I found that one part of God's kingdom was given over to temples, temples more marvelous in construction than anything of which I had ever dreamed, temples that people in different parts of the universe were constructing day by day, by the acts, motives, and experiences of their lives without being aware of it. I entered temples wherein I beheld the world's work for thousands of years to come. I visited temples dedicated to the different suns, moons, and planets, and I learned in a more perfect way than ever before of the God, principle sent out from these higher regions to the planetary bodies suspended in space. My understanding of creation, as I looked upon it from my new viewpoint, showed me that no, 88, form of expression occupying space is ever lost. If it were possible for one atom of cosmic or intercosmic ether to become lost, then would it be possible for the universe, under certain conditions, to be plunged at any time into a chaos of discord and disaster? Since man himself is made up of highly charged atoms of cosmic power, it would be possible for his spirit to lose its identity and he be plunged into the universal, if the immutable law of creation permitted any expression or life-possessing spiritual individuality to change its form and become absorbed into liquid ether or disintegrated into nothing. High up in those kingdoms of God I found myself, not in the presence of one God, but of many. I realize that the mind that accepts one God or no God at all is limited in its conception. When we come to realize life from a larger viewpoint and we behold with the spiritual vision the magnitude of the universe, then do we realize the wisdom of the plan that gives to the universe many gods of power, many rulers and many teachers. 89. The power of the ruling gods of the universe combined forms one great universal mind that radiates throughout all forms of expression in nature and is one in harmony and understanding. My first trip to God's kingdom gave me this revelation, and on each succeeding trip I gained a more comprehensive understanding of the great internal plan, although I realized that it would be impossible for me to grasp the plan in its entirety, even throughout eternity. It was not often that beings from the lower kingdoms came into the higher realms of space, and so I was received with a great deal of ovation, and wherever I went in that great world of being my condition was known and anticipated beforehand. I was upon one occasion the honored guest of 25 ruling gods. What my experiences were in the presence of those mighty beings can never be told in words that could be comprehended by the material mind. Special power was exerted over me until I beheld myself as I will be in 100 years from now. Not many celestial beings would have been pleased with the idea of taking on such high conditions, knowing that they would be obliged to lay them aside on returning to their former condition. It was exceedingly helpful to me, however, to be so privileged. It furnished me with an incentive to more rapid progress. 9, Chapter 3. In God's Kingdom. In God's kingdom I found myself possessed of a higher expression of the faculties than had been mine while in a celestial state of being. My powers of understanding were capable of higher action and were much more intense. My vision could penetrate and rise above objects within a radius of thousands of miles. I was capable of hearing quite distinctly sounds thousands of miles distant. Everything with which I came in contact seemed to have attained such a supreme state of development that the life and conditions seemed to be the acme of perfection. But it had seemed to be the same in the celestial regions, and by this time I was led to believe that in the still higher realms above there were degrees of perfection not known in God's kingdom. Never before had I listened to such wisdom as emanated from the person of the ruling God of those higher regions. He spoke, 92, not with his voice, but with his being, and I did not catch the wisdom with my organs of hearing, but with my being, and with this wisdom a strange consciousness came to me. Always before, the spheres of being in which I lived, developed, and unfolded seemed larger than my conception of them. I had been then but one small part of the conception of creative law, but now my understanding swept the panorama of material and celestial being, until I was larger myself than the material universe or anything in it, but I was smaller than the state of being into which I had entered, and I would continue to be so until I had attained that degree of unfoldment that lifted me up into a conception of the life and conditions of realms of being still higher above. I realized that the time would come when I should know that there was no such thing as distance. My comprehension would be so acute that the different spheres of being would appear as degrees, leading from one to the other, and I would be able to stand at a given point and with one sweep of my hand I would be able to touch the realms of the material, the spiritual, the celestial, the godly, the blessed, 93, the superlatively spiritual, the superlatively celestial, etc. I realize that as we grow in wisdom we get away from the limited conceptions that make conditions seem what they are not. It was a wonderful thought to me, and I was as one grasping a telescope focused on the earth, the spiritual and the celestial worlds, in which I saw revealed the magnitude of creation, 1,000 times larger than any material conception grasps it, and I myself was larger than anything I looked at, not larger in appearance, for that was not necessary in the new light of my understanding.